Well, hello, friends and neighbors and comedy film nerderies.
Some of you are neighbors.
Some of you are neighbors.
Yeah, it's true.
It's Comedy Film Nerds episode 435, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike? Well, that's our guest. But
yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
Sure, if I look
I'll
right
answer
at you,
to Mike. Yeah.
If I call
yeah.
you.
I mean, you called Aaron Neal, so that's okay.
I'm really done with everybody's regular names. I'm just making it. I really don't think people should. I'm tired of the restrictions of the man.
As long as we know who you mean, it doesn't matter.
If I'm looking at you and I'm talking, just
it's
accept
fine.
It, man. Why you gotta like let society tell you who you're supposed to be?
There are too many rules.
Yeah, man.
If today I'll be going by Steve.
Yeah, well, just let it go. Yeah, it's fine.
We're halfway to 870.
There's no privacy on the internet anyway, man. If they really want to know your name, they'll find it.
Can we just throw away the labels and just be more free with who we are?
You know what? Speaking of neighbors, our guest actually is a neighbor. Every time we record, he's directly above us.
He really is. Because he sleeps in a crawl space.
Yes.
We keep him up there.
You'll see him at Shriek Fest a little later.
Yes, we found this gentleman. He's kind of like a stowaway or a squatter, if you will. And we figured we might as well bring him on the show.
Yeah. I mean, if he's already in the crawl space, he's only a few feet away from the show anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird that he always listens in. You always just hear like an eye or an ear kind of floating above us.
And a creaking.
And a creaking.
Yeah, so you know if like, we're doing an ad read or something, you know, we hear the creaking, and then the creakings come back. You know, like,
always watching.
Always watching. So let's bring him down into the studio. Mike Bertolina, everybody, who tell everyone what your job here is.
I run
other than Attic Creeper.
Yeah, I'm the general sort of like creep who hangs in the crazy little window. I run all things comedy, which, as many I'm sure of your listeners know, is a comedy podcast network, amongst other things.
Amongst other things.
Yeah.
And so tell everybody a little bit. There's some big news that just got announced.
Yes, we just struck a deal with Comedy Central. We're going to be releasing 3 one-hour specials and a New Faces of Comedy series that we're going to be doing, hosted by our own Bill Burr.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
So we're going to take this opportunity to break some new talent, help some people break through, and showcase some of those new comics that we all know, but the world doesn't yet. We're really excited about it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you guys do also a lot of programming for other streaming networks. Like you do stuff for YouTube, and you do some stuff for Facebook too, right?
We do. Well, we create a lot of our own original video content. We use those as platforms to grow the audience. It's been a good year for that. We started releasing original videos at the beginning of the year.
Right.
We've got several that are doing really, really well, particularly on YouTube and Facebook, you're right. We've done some short form stuff on Instagram, and now we're talking to a lot of these bigger distribution platforms that want our stuff. And we'll figure out how to do that.
And then
that's great.
It's going to be year two of the ATC Festival in Phoenix.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's coming up at the end of October, the 26th to the 28th. I hope I got those dates right. 25th to the 28th. See?
Close enough. Steve, that's close enough.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you, Mitch, for the correction.
Yeah, I hope everybody comes out. It's going to be really great. We got a great lineup. Comedy Film Nerds, of course, is going to be there. Bill Burr is going to be doing the Monday Morning Podcast as well as stand-up. We got some new additions. Middleditch and Schwartz are going to be doing their show. Natasha and Moshe are going to be doing theirs. Big J is coming out to do his crowd work show. So a lot of great stuff. Yeah, we're just kind of trying to expand.
Oh, yeah, I had so much fun at it last year. I mean, it was fun for us on several levels, just as running festivals, and we know the work that's involved.
Yes.
So we're very had much respect for everything you guys put on.
Thanks. So whenever there's a perk, we know, A, how hard it is to get, and B, that it's like it's something that only someone involved on the other side of the festival would understand that the performers would appreciate that. Like anything from free food to like a shuttle bus. If you have a festival promoter or a programmer that only does festivals, you're like, why do they need that? We're giving them a hotel room.
Yeah.
They don't need a shuttle bus. They don't need free food. The hell with them.
We've got great partners and some really good sponsors this year, and it's definitely helping us to make it a great experience for the comics as much as the fans. Graham, I think you're the one that last time said it felt like summer camp for comics.
Summer camp for comics, and I felt so appreciated, and I had such a blast. I remember just laughing for 3 days straight. Yeah. It's like it's the thing we always loved about PodFest was like, we're all busy, we're all on the road, and when we all can get together, we just like catch up and laugh. Yeah. I mean, I laughed my ass off for the whole time I was there.
Yeah, it was really fun. And we liked that it was a real collaborative festival, because we had these ticketed events, and we still have those this year. But we also build this pop-up podcast studio where a ton of podcasts are just running all throughout the day, and everybody was just jumping in on each other's show,
right?
Which was really fun to see. It was like our first time seeing a physical representation of this idea of all things comedy, this comics coming together, creating their own things, owning their own things, and getting it out in front of their audiences.
Right. And that's such, I mean, really, that is the vibe here. We've talked about it. One of the things we love since we moved the podcast from Chris's garage to your studio is we've snatched up so many great guests just because they're hanging out here because they were just on another show, or they're doing the show after ours or whatever. And it's like, hey. Right.
And if we have a guest that drops out at the last minute, our immediate question is, well, who's on Punch Drunk today?
Who's on? Because they report right ahead of us. So it's like,
try to grab them. Don't let them leave.
And hey,
I think there were a couple fighting strippers today. Is that right? I think that would have been an interesting show.
Well, what am I going to just
say? You end up with this nerd. So, you know, what are you going to do?
No, but I mean, literally, we got Darren Carter on the show last week for that very reason. And we both have known Darren for years. Yeah. Haven't seen him in forever. So you're like, this is, it's the vibe. I mean, I directed this commercial, this PSA for Open Primaries back in June, and I remember our location fell out 48 hours before shooting, and I called you just like in a panic, and you were like, yeah, come use the studio this weekend. Yeah. And that was like that's the vibe.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm directing this thing and I need some help. You guys are like, yeah, absolutely. And you made it work. It was just such a thing that we have really benefited from and love being a part of.
Yeah, we like to think of it as like just as much a clubhouse as a playground.
Yeah.
A place where you can come in, we have the tools you need to make things, and we want to encourage people to do that.
But you do make everyone wear smoking jackets, which is a little weird.
That's the club element. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And you get certain patches, the more achievements that you get. This ATC for a long time was this great, grand idea. And that's what's been really rewarding about this past year. Once we sort of organized and put a team behind it and focused on creating more content and putting a team behind all of these comics to help build this stuff, it just to see the way that the fans have drawn towards it, and now more of the comics are starting to be drawn towards it, because if you're creators, and we want to help creators create.
No, I dig it, man. You know, whenever we record, I always stay here and I post the episodes from here and everything, because I just like the vibe. I like being in the green room hanging out, and, you know, I usually microwave up some kind of icky food, and that's always
You take over the break room, which I really like. Every time I come here, it's like, oh, Graham's back in his office.
He's getting changed.
Please put those pants back on.
He's getting his nails done. This seems like an odd place to make that happen. Well, cool. Well, and also the perfect fit of having you on the show. We were talking because you like watching a lot of movies, and you used to work as a
prop master. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was a prop master for 12 years. I've had a very strange career path, but, that was my professional start.
How do you go from prop master to running a podcast festival with a bunch of degenerate comedians?
That's a great question. I wish there was a roadmap that made sense.
You don't hear that. That's not a normal leap.
I mean, I can tell you the story. I was a film school grad and fell into props because I dated a prop girl and I thought that it was a really cool job. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, I had a career. You know, you find something, you like it. I really loved the job. It was it was awesome. If you like something, you're generally good at it. And I was. So I just, it turned from one show to the next show to the next show, and you're on this spinning wheel rolling down a hill and there's no way off.
Right.
And I hit
one freelance job to the next.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And you're usually booking your next one right when you're in the middle of another.
Right.
And I hit this point where I just felt like there was no change. Like the movies got bigger, but it was all the same shit. And I hit and I just wanted, I wanted something different. I wanted to break out of it. So I took an educational sabbatical. I went back to business school, rented out my house here, moved my family to San Francisco for a couple years, my MBA. While I was up in San Francisco, I started working with brands and the agencies and things like that, and worked with a company called IDEO. And then I came back here and I did two things. I started working in branded entertainment. I started a small product placement agency, and I started working with Al on All Things Comedy because he and Bill were just starting this thing.
Right.
And I was working with brands and I asked him like...
This is before they even had an office.
Yeah, there was no, there wasn't really much of anything. And he hadn't done anything yet. So we put together a couple brand deals and then I just got involved. And then, you know, brand entertainment career started growing for me as ATC started gaining all this traction, but it was a side hustle, as it was for a lot of people. Right. It was for Bill, it was for Al. They were focused on their other things.
Right.
And then a couple of years ago, we got together and said, let's turn this into a real business. Because I think the one challenge with ATC for a long time was it was so independent and so there were no rules, and there still are no rules for what you guys want to create. But the lack of entity at the center of All Things Comedy just kept it a little too loose, and it wasn't growing as a company. So we raised a little capital. We partnered with Soapbox Films, who gives us amazing infrastructure to create. They have all their amazing state-of-the-art post facilities, a spectacular team over there. And I quit my job, and I've been here running this full time since July of 17.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's noticeable, the difference in, you know, like ATC going from a cool idea to like an
office space.
To office space with a sound stage and a recording studio.
And I'm getting deals with networks now.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Which is huge. So that's cool. All right. Well, let's
talk about some movies.
Let's do that. Yeah. Let's do that.
The nonsense.
So, let's talk about movies I haven't seen.
We'll be talking about the one you have seen as well. The Operation Finale I got to see with Oscar Isaac and Ben Kingsley. And
who plays Eichmann?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this was a movie that I was interested in. It was I wouldn't say it's an action movie. It's more of a drama about how I think it's Mossad, the Israeli special forces, went to Argentina to basically find Adolf Eichmann and hold him accountable for being the architect of the Final Solution. So what's interesting is that I was reading the trivia. He was not particularly well known as a Nazi outside of Germany until his escape from capture after the war. Prior to Eichmann's capture and the trial, which brought focus to his responsibility in transporting victims to the camps, the man most associated with being architect of the Final Solution was Reinhard Heydrich, who was assassinated during the war. And that's for the little history nerds that want to know exactly what happened. Now, here's the interesting thing about this movie. Unfortunately, it's not a great movie. And I was really disappointed. It was
this is where I mean this is a we're starting and we're ramping into Oscar.
Yes, yeah. And this one was this had the vibe of like we wanted this to be an Oscar movie, didn't quite pan out that way. Let's release it early when no one else is releasing anything and try to at least make some of our money back. It's one of those movies that you can't really specifically put your finger on what went wrong. Because it's got great actors, it's got good performances, but ultimately, historical drama, based on a true story, like everything. It wasn't like a World War II drama. Very significant. Yes. And I think as I was looking at like the credits and I was watching like this film, ultimately the fault goes to the director, Chris Weitz.
Okay. Chris Weitz. Okay.
Yeah, and the reason is because. If you look up his IMDb history, he kind of goes from genre to genre, and he has a specialty. His specialty is human relationships, like about a boy, and all these like really kind of heartfelt type scenes that he's really good at directing. when he goes out of that comfort zone, things happen. And like one of the things too, if you pull him up, Aaron, did he also direct The Golden Compass? I believe.
Was that his brother? Or was that him?
I don't know. We got to look it up. So, I'm thinking like as I was watching this, I really felt like this was a director that just, this isn't his genre. It's not his comfort zone, and it kind of shows in what he is able to direct. Like he's Golden Compass, right?
Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
Yeah, and also About a Boy.
Yeah.
So, and About a Boy is a fantastic film. So.
He directed Down to Earth.
A Better Life.
Life and The Twilight Zone, The Twilight Saga, New Moon.
Oh, okay. Well, there. I can't blame him for that because that was off the rails regardless of what he could do with it.
He's brought in the middle of a big
project. Yeah.
Oddly, he's listed for American Pie as director uncredited.
I think that was him and his brother.
Oh, was that
his
right?
brothers together. So that's where his strength lies. But when you take him out of that, like Golden Compass was a disaster. And this movie, the problem with this movie is when you have a bunch of secret agents from Israel and they're looking for a Nazi hiding in Argentina, this film should have a fair amount of tension to it. And it did not. The entire movie is completely tensionless. And, you know, you could see as the shots are being composed and the editing is being put together, like, this is supposed to be a tense scene. It's not. This is supposed to be a dramatic scene. It's not. Like, everything is off by, like, one kilter. Like a really weird way. Like, even, like, the... So it also makes you appreciate, like, how hard tension is to get across in a film.
Yeah.
Especially if you have great actors, you know, great performances. And ultimately... You know, with the directing and the editing, like, it falls flat because it's a long movie. It's at least a half an hour too long. And all the scenes that are supposed to be ratcheted up with tension, and they're not. Like there never feels like there's any danger in, like, you know, the secret agents, like, trying to get him out of the country. Like, all right, well, we have a deadline. We got to get him out. I'm like, yeah, but I don't feel like who's chasing you? Like, who's trying to find you? And like, there's never that, like... ticking clock of like of the danger of like a good example is Munich.
Yeah,
like that movie was full of tension. Like every single scene and every single part.
Yeah,
you felt not only that that tension, but also you felt like that cat and mouse chase of what's going on. Like, oh, they're secret agents. They're killing each other. They're deadly. And there's, like, there's double agents.
There was
and there's,
physical danger.
Yeah, there was actual danger, and which created actual tension.
Yeah, and it's like, you bring up a good point, because we know the outcome of Munich.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But still, we're watching that movie going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good tension in a historical drama when the audience is like, how the hell did they pull this off? Yeah, I know they did, but man.
And this was the same thing here. Like, I know what happens here. You know, they get him and they put him on trial. But I want to see how they get him. I want to see everything that went wrong. I want to see how hard it was. And we never really see a lot of that. We just feel like we're kind of going from scene to scene. I'm like, all right, they're sent this assignment. They go. They do it. They have him holed up in a safe house. And then it's never explained why. They can't leave until they get him to sign a confession. Like, well, wait, this makes no sense. You're a secret operation. Why do you need him to sign this piece of paper before you get him out and put him on trial? Like, there was these weird kind of things. Like, if that's historically accurate, great, but it's never really explained in the film. Mm-hmm. Like, what the reason is for this.
So they followed the roadmap to get step to step to step.
Right.
But the journey there... It wasn't particularly interesting.
It felt like you were watching... Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It felt like you're watching cliff notes of these events.
Right.
Like, okay, well, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, this happened. There was no drama or tension throughout the entire thing. And also the casting was a little off of the supporting characters. Like, I liked Nick Kroll, and, you know, he was a kind of, like, you know, quippy and flippant in scenes and, like... But at the same time, it's like, well, isn't he a secret agent, too? Would he really be acting like that?
Yeah. Nick Kroll is an interesting choice. I love him, but...
So, and also, like, oh, all these guys are spies, but they just, it just seems like a, you know, a travel club that just showed up in Argentina from Israel. it was a weird kind of feel and dynamic. Like, I feel like, you know, if you had, you know, in better with a director that had more experience with this genre, I think this film could have come out a lot better. So it was ultimately an odd choice.
I want to ask Mike this. So all those years of being a prop master, obviously they always say nobody sets out to make a bad movie. And I'm sure everybody, you know, you've got Ben Kingsley, you've got Oscar Isaac, you've got this like, okay, we got a shot at making. Have you ever been on the set of a film and went,
this is going to be terrible?
Yeah.
Yes. I've had that experience. Although it's really funny because sometimes we're together as a crew and you go, this is going to be awful, and it just sings and it works out really well. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you think it's the best thing in the world and it just falls flat. So there's a lot that...
Let's talk about that, since that's kind of probably... My guess is what happened. Everybody got together on this movie and went, oh, here we go. This is it. Oscar.
All the elements you need. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd be curious to read the script and see if there's something missing there as well. Because, you know, sometimes you'll read the script and you'll say, well, maybe it'll come together... And it does, but you cover up for mistakes by making really great casting choices. And
right.
You have a great production designer who puts together a really beautiful set and presentation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
You have a great dramatized story, even Argo. Like, you know, Argo was so brilliantly put together.
That's a great example of a film where we knew exactly what was going to happen.
Right.
But we were
along for the ride.
On the edge of our seats
the entire time.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, though. So going back to the time you worked on something.
This movie, you were on the entire seat the entire time.
Right.
Yeah. There was no edge.
There's no edge. You were in the back.
You were there. Leaning back.
Looking at your watch.
Yes. Right. Yeah, pretty much.
So when that happened, when you worked on a movie and you were like, oh, this could really be something, and then you saw the final product, were you able to go, oh, they didn't this, or I remember when they shot that, or man, what the hell were they editing? Like,
I'm trying to think of an example where everybody thought it was great, but it didn't come out well. I've got more the other direction, where we all thought it was not great, or we just knew it was a piece of shit, and there you go.
And it was.
I don't know if I want to... So there was a movie that the end result I didn't think was as great as I originally thought it was going to be. It wasn't bad, but it definitely wasn't as good as the original script and what we were trying to do. That was a movie called Paul with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. I don't know if you guys remember the film.
Oh, the one about the alien?
The alien.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like...
I saw that movie.
Love the script. We had so much fun making that film. Like, it was a blast. The whole crew was phenomenal. Everybody was along for a really fun ride. And then I saw it, and I was just like,
it fell flat.
It wasn't what I thought we were making, you know? Mm-hmm. So there were some choices that were made along the way that I think, whether it was in post or whatnot. Also, you got to think... That alien wasn't there the whole time while we were making that movie.
Right.
In fact, it was funny because Seth Rogen did the voice. Mm-hmm. And it was actually Joe Latrullio who was on set doing the voice for the cast members. And he was awesome. And we had a lot of energy and fun off of him on set. Mm-hmm. Seth Rogen was never there. So I don't know. That was an interesting example where...
Well, it was also a great example of a film like The Concept. It was like, oh, I can't. This sounds really funny and fun. I can't wait to see this. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, that's not what I thought it was going to be.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, think you coming off of having seen, you know, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, and you thought that there was also a different director on those films too.
Right.
You know, Edgar Wright wasn't there. It was definitely a big chunk of his team, but it wasn't an Edgar Wright film.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right.
Well, let's talk about you saw Mike Sisters Brothers.
Yes.
I did see Sisters Brothers.
What tell us about?
I don't have notes, but I can definitely share.
Yes.
So Sisters Brothers is a movie. It's a Western. Set in Oregon and Northern California in the late 1800s. It's about two brothers that are essentially, they're assassins that work for this evil...
Joaquin Phoenix and John C. Reilly.
Correct, who are phenomenal in the film. Mm-hmm. They work for this commodore of this town in Oregon, and they're setting out to find a prospector who has developed a formula that can that can help you find gold more easily in the water, basically. It's like a divining principle that will make the gold glow. And this Commodore wants him dead and wants them to find out the formula from him, so they have to go out and find him and torture him. At the same time, there is a – and the prospector is played by Riz Ahmed, who I adore, and he's being tracked by a detective, a private detective, who's also hired by the Commodore to find him. The brothers have to come in and do the dirty work. Mm-hmm. The inspector is played by Jake Gyllenhaal, so teamed up with Riz Ahmed again after Nightcrawlers. Things don't totally go the way everybody planned. I don't want to give the...
You guys typically go through
the entire thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So...
Now, what was the tone of the film? Like, the trailer really kind of, like, couldn't pick a lane. Like, was it a action western? Was it a comedy? Did it mix genres? Was it both? Like,
it's funny. What? You know, I've read some things that people have written about it, and they talk about the comedy of the film. The comedy, I don't consider this film a comedy at all.
Well, that's good to know, because the trailer kind of did.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there are definitely humorous moments, and there's some laughs in it, but it's I wouldn't call it a comedy.
The director is Jacques Audiard.
Yeah, Audiard. Jacques Audiard. And
who's done
a lot of sort of world films. He did there's a couple.
Rust and Bone. He did A Prophet. Read My Lips. The Best That My Heart Skipped.
Yeah. So, interesting film. I at first, particularly in the first act, wasn't sure if I was really going to enjoy it. I felt like I didn't know what this movie was trying to be.
Right.
At first, it felt like Waiting for Godot in the Old West. When it was two brothers rolling around, and like the dialogue was...
That'd be great if that was the pitch. Sold.
Done. Yeah. And even that would be interesting. I could totally buy into something like that. But then it sort of takes a turn. And as the movie went along, I really kind of fell in love with these characters. And I found that all of them were magnetic in their own way. Mm-hmm. I felt like Jake Gyllenhaal... He played with his accent in a way that was off-putting, and I think some people might find that it doesn't know what he's trying to be, whether he's trying to be like British or sort of like upper class
westerny. Affectation. Was he trying to do westerny?
He wasn't really doing westerny. It was very strange. Mm-hmm. But I think all the cast was great. It was more about people changing, and you've catching all these folks at an evolution point in their lives. Because there's a conflict between the two brothers, and that John C. Reilly is the older brother who's got this wild child kid brother who is, he's a loose cannon, and he's followed along in this career with him because of this need to protect him. But he's tired. He's had enough of this life. Whereas Joaquin Phoenix's character, I think it's Charlie, is just, this is the way we're going. Why would we ever change? We're great at this. We're the sisters' brothers. We're legends, you know? Mm-hmm. And the experience that they have along the way, once they finally encounter the other two, definitely affects both of them. So I really enjoyed it. I wasn't sure how I felt, and in the end, I'm like...
It won you over.
Yeah, it really did. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, it got me thinking about some of these... You know, postmodern contemporary westerns that have been made. I think, like, to me, there's none better than Unforgiven. It's one of my all-time favorite films.
Yeah.
And what I liked about Unforgiven is that the approach in that film was more about realism than anything else. Like the pacing and the way, seeing the killings that they did there. In
credit goes to the director
without any
Clint Eastwood. The way he put it together.
But there wasn't any glory in the violence. It was a very real depiction of violence. This film was more about the personas and the interpersonal relationships of the people.
But getting back to Unforgiven, which is a great point. They also talk. I mean, they kind of were addressing how much violence is glorified in the westerns, because that kid's like, I want to kill someone. They're like, you think this is easy? You think this is fun? Being, you know, going. This is not.
And my favorite moment in that film was when he kills the guy in the outhouse, and you see the way it affects him when he finally did that. He realizes that this isn't something for that I should be glorifying. Yeah. This is horrific. Right. I'm not cut out for this.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, too, as we were talking about pacing, is that movie was so perfectly paced. Like, yeah. every single scene, the tension is, like, palpable, where not only is there a slow build on almost every single scene, you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the scene. Is he going to shoot him? Is the entire situation going to diffuse? What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And that's like this mark of like a great director.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the pacing was great in Sisters Brothers. There's some action. There's some shootouts and things like
maybe
that.
Maybe some Oscar nominations you think that might come out of this one?
I don't know. I potentially for cast, for acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautifully shot. I mean, it's gorgeous. And I think that's the most Western component of the film is the is the cinematography, the sweeping landscapes, things like that.
Right.
There are these great moments of action. Not a lot of it, but when they happen, it's quick and bloody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually humor in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this sort of slow burn up until that next moment happens. And I enjoyed that. It starts right out the gates with just pure violence. And that's the other thing that's kind of interesting about the film, too, is that as like Eli, the John C. Reilly character, he's the one that's sort of driving this point about evolving. You see him wanting to become a better person, but it's not because he feels what he's doing is wrong. He is really good at killing people, and you don't see that he feels guilty for it or anything like that. I think he's just exhausted, it's a nuance that I think only John C. Reilly could pull off. He's great.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite performances of the year, for sure.
Did you see 310 to Yuma?
I did.
Yeah. Well, how do you where would you put that compared to this one?
I like this more. I say that my friend JP Jones did props on 310 to Yuma. He did an amazing job in that film too. That one was more to me. I mean, it was also an adaptation, like a tried and true action with Western with. This is more of a portrait of humanity, and that one was more about it has the action arc.
Action,
to it,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. This falls more in the world of True Grit to me. The adaptation of True Grit.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. All right,
let's get to a White Boy Rick. Now, Graham, you saw this. Now, I didn't get a text halfway through, so I'm assuming you saw the entire thing.
Does that happen a lot with you?
That just happened with Predator. When they're truly awful, we might throw a text back and forth. Are you sure we're doing a spoiler?
Do we have to talk about this? You know, I wanted to see White Boy Rick because I liked the trailer, and it looks like it's based on a true story.
Yes.
And, you know, Matt McConaughey, this is the kind of right up the McConaughey alley.
Yeah.
And
McConaughey alley.
And, you know, because he's not being all Lincoln commercially in it. So, and then it was interesting. I saw on Rotten Tomatoes that it didn't get that great a number. And I was like,
really?
Man.
It's actually one of the reasons why I went to Sisters Brothers instead of this weekend was, I shouldn't say that. I hate that I made my decision based on that. But I was really disappointed when I read that.
I was like, oh, man. But then I went, it's a good movie.
Huh.
I really liked it. And this kid, and there's a stat, he didn't even know Richie Merritt. He had never heard of Matthew McConaughey.
Right.
And I think that plays, like you can kind of tell, which is... It's funny the world we live in where someone cannot know who Matthew McConaughey is.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Right?
Because how old is this kid? He's like a teenager.
Yeah, right? He's like 16 or 17.
So he's just watching gaming videos on YouTube.
Yeah, he's just watching.
That's all he's watching.
Unless there's a video of Matthew McConaughey playing video
playing
games.
Minecraft. Yeah,
no
that's
one's
going
to give a shit.
Is Matthew McConaughey on Twitch? Then
So, and, you know, Matthew McConaughey, and it's based on a true story. I actually watched a little, before I saw this, a little like documentary, about a 30, 40 minute documentary that was done by a Detroit News Channel. It's basically just like their expose or whatever about this guy. So it was really intriguing.
Yeah.
And while the trailer gives up way too much of what happens in the story, it's still the way they tell it. I was like, it was intriguing. And a bunch of really good actors. It's Matthew McConaughey and a bunch of no names. I mean, there's what's her name, plays an FBI agent. Let me go back and find this. She's...
And how is Richie Merritt?
He's great.
This is his first film?
I believe so.
That's great.
Because he really, like, it was...
You know, it's weird. I don't think Matthew McConaughey may have known who he was either.
Pretty sure about that. Matthew McConaughey had no idea who this kid was, nor should he.
And Matthew McConaughey plays a real character in this film, right?
Yeah, he's playing his actual dad. And, you know, that father-son thing, they did a really... Jennifer Jason Leigh plays the FBI agent.
Okay.
She's not like a huge A-list box office draw. She's not right. Jennifer Lawrence or whatever. So it's really, it's Matthew McConaughey, but then just an engaging story.
Mm-hmm.
And what really happened to this guy and how they play it. And it's like, man, did he get chewed up in a shitty system.
Right.
And, you know, Bruce Dern plays his grandfather who has some small parts that are great.
You know what it felt like as I was watching the trailer too? It felt like all those spy and CIA stories of like, somebody works with the CIA or they become like an informant or whatever, and then they call it getting burned, like burn notice, where that's really what it felt like. All right, we're done with you now. Go to prison. You're done. Or disappear.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they depict that. And then, you know, he went to jail for 30 years, man. And like...
Whoa.
He just got out.
Mm-hmm. And...
It's interesting, this movie comes out and like the story is still being written as the movie comes out.
Yeah, and apparently Mike Young, who we actually interviewed at ATC's festival last year, was involved somehow, Aaron?
He was involved in getting out of prison.
Right.
Wow.
Mike Young was?
He petitioned the governor.
Yeah. See, the power
of Mike Young doing good.
Yeah. He got him out and then he went to prison in Florida.
Not Mike Young.
No, the guy.
He's starting a podcast from
they grabbed him for other charges.
Yeah, so it's sort of like it's really, and it's the first movie I've seen thus far, at least in this part, where I'm like, okay, this kid could get an Oscar nomination.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, wow.
That'd be
so cool.
Because he does this teenager, you know, and Matthew McConaughey's trying to protect his family.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's Detroit in the 80s. You know, and there's even, they say that during the at least 1 week of principal photography they shot it in Cleveland. Production was briefly halted because there was gunfire in the neighborhoods. And it looks gritty. It looks 80s. Mm-hmm. It looks Detroit. I mean, it looks like...
Were people breakdancing on cardboard boxes?
There was a scene, though, where they go to a roller rink and the music from the 80s, because it's all rap and hip-hop from the 80s. Right. And I was like,
I love that.
They did a great job with that. And it's really this kid. Mm-hmm. He's a really solid... And there's an amazing supporting cast of maybe virtually a lot of no-names. Maybe they have some TV credits. But it's not this A-list powerhouse.
Yeah.
And so it was really
It's funny, you know, thinking on the Rotten Tomatoes thing and, you know, how that can hurt a film from winning from categories where it should win. You know, like people might over... This is the thing. It should be a meritocracy based on the category that you're up for. But I'm a jaded person when it comes to the Oscars, because I used to have a ballot that was, these are the movies that I think should win and these are the ones that I think will win, and you know, I kept breaking my heart to make that other one, so I always like do my ballot off of who I think will win, and ultimately it's based on popularity in a lot of ways.
You know? Yeah, it's puzzling to me. I agree. We do it. You know, we do an Oscar.
We do a should will.
A should will every year with Doug Benson, where we pick our shoulds and our wills.
Oh, you do that. Oh, great.
Yeah, we do that every year, and I don't understand the low Rotten Tomatoes number. I don't understand what missed.
One of the things with Rotten Tomatoes is that the system isn't completely accurate, obviously, but one of the reasons is if a reviewer is lukewarm on the film, like, oh, it's okay, like, there's no choice for that. It's either fresh or rotten. So a lot of so a lot of reviewers that were like mediocre on it. Well, I got to pick one. I didn't think it was great, so I got to pick.
Yeah, I've never
like a five star system.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like 3.5
it's binary.
Stars.
This isn't
Yelp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's I get that's interesting. Yeah, I'm I was. That question you just asked, Mike, what didn't work for me? I was in the theater trying to go.
So you were looking for it.
I was looking for it.
That's interesting.
You know, I was like, what's the problem here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It felt like the main criticism was, again, the trailer gave me too much information. So I kind of saw some stuff coming, which is not the movie's fault. It's the trailer's fault.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Yeah, it's a good film. It's worth watching.
Yeah. By the way, directors of feature films love when trailers give away too much.
Yeah. And Matthew McConaughey wasn't too Matthew McConaughey, huh? Mm-mm.
No, he was more. And unless it's that thing where that you know mainstream critics just turn on a person, they'll just pick someone. We're done with this guy, and they'll just turn on him. So I don't know if there was something, but I was like, no, he wasn't all like, hey man, you know, like he was playing.
Critics who hate Lincolns.
Yeah, it was a Detroit. He was playing a Detroit, you know, grifter who's trying to protect his kids, but he's selling guns. That's how he's feeding his family, is selling guns, but he's like trying to take the moral high ground, but not dope.
Right.
You know, I think he pulled it off.
I worked with McConaughey when I was doing props on a movie that was an example of a film that I thought was not going to be good, but turned out to be a lot better than I thought, and that was Magic Mike.
Oh,
you read the script for Magic Mike and you're like, ooh, boy, this is not going to go well. And when we shot it, Soderbergh, he left a lot of room for improvisation. And he was a master at that, at setting the table for letting them sort of breathe and find their characters. And he pulled it off. What ended up coming out was not the movie that was originally written, and it was brilliant. I thought. I don't know what you guys think of Magic Mike, but I thought it was a really fun film.
I haven't seen it yet.
You know, I haven't seen it either.
Really? Mm-hmm. We should go out tonight. Yeah. date night. Guys' night out.
Yeah.
Bros' night.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a sponsor.
Let's do it.
Yeah, right. It's Casper Mattresses. Graham, tell us about your Casper mattress. You still on it?
The Casper mattress I slept on last night.
Yes, that's
I got
the
a
one.
Great night of sleep this morning, and I woke up. I went on a bike ride, which is fantastic, along the glorious Pacific Ocean.
Now, you could have gone on that bike ride without a Casper mattress.
No, there's no way. I wouldn't have been able to. My body would have said no.
Yeah.
But a Casper mattress, I say yes.
Mm. Well, Casper is great because they work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. I don't know why they would make that a talking point, but that's
I don't know why you said it that way.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to try to make it creepy. And it's a breathable design that helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. And 20,000 reviews, an average of 4.8 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google. It's the internet's favorite mattress. And they offer three mattresses, the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is they have other products too, like pillows and sheets, one-stop shop. They're all designed and developed and assembled in the U.S. And the great thing is free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. And hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. And so what's great is, like, you know, you're on, say you're on day 98, and you know what? It's not for me.
I don't like it.
Yeah, you can send it back. Yeah. And the great thing is terms and conditions apply, but you get $50 off your select mattress by visiting casper.com/comedyfilmnerds and using Comedy Film Nerds at checkout. Boom, not going to let you pay full price.
No.
Not for you Comedy Film Nerds fans. Not at all. $50 towards select mattresses. All you got to do is visit casper.com/comedyfilmnerds and use Comedy Film Nerds at checkout. Boom.
100-day trial. That's pretty awesome, honestly. Think about it. It's over 3 months.
That's a lot of sleepy time nights.
Well, I think, you know, beds takes a little while to break in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need at least 30 days to figure it out.
At least 30 days to figure it out.
But they give you 100.
That's awesome.
So, all right, Patreon sponsors.
Yes, $50 a month, guys. We will read your business, your non-for-profit, whatever you want to do. Go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds.
Johnny Roulon's still here. He's promoting his novel, Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel, follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her immortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com. That's happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And our favorite charity, the Audacity Performing Arts Project. They produce after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Please visit them at audacityperformingarts.com.
Awesome.
That's audacityperformingarts.com. And the podcast, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at randumify.com, randumbify.com. And we have Alice Fraser, our comedian friend from Australia.
She was just up at Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Edinburgh Fest.
Yeah. She has the Bugle, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice. She has a series of three solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April of 2018 with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. All you got to do is Google Alice Fraser Trilogy for more info, so check it out. That is a long show, 3 hours. That is impressive. All right, let's get to some trailers. Captain Marvel dropped, finally. We've been waiting for this for a while.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's look at this right here with Brie Larson.
I love how the immediately, you're like, oh, this is the 90s. They do a blockbuster video
blockbuster
shot.
Game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
War is a universal language. I know a renegade soldier when I see one.
What do you think of this costume?
Never occurred to me that one might come from above.
Captain America wasn't using his anymore, so they had some extra leftover material.
Space
and they just made hers from it.
Big car chase. Truth be told, I was ready to hang it up till I met you today.
I love they made this set in the 90s and that Nick Fury has two
you're
eyes.
Not from yeah. around here.
Yeah. It's hard to explain.
So they did the mocap anti-illusion.
Oh yeah, they
I keep having
Benjamin
these
buttoned up a lot of
memories. I see flashes. I think I had a life here. But I can't tell if it's real.
Character I'm not as familiar with in the Marvel universe. Well, not as much as Jack, that's for sure.
We have no idea what threats are out there.
My daughter cracked up at that.
Yeah, yeah. People were actually giving Marvel shit about that when she punches the old lady in the bus. But no, it's a shape-shifting Skrull. It's okay.
Exactly.
She can punch an old lady.
It's definitely a Skrull.
Yeah.
I'm not what you think I am.
Way to take everything seriously. It's a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Who did props.
Yeah, I thought it would be Russell Bobbitt. He does all the...
I'm excited Marvel about things. This movie. I mean, honestly, Marvel, it's, you know, they just know what they're doing. And, you know, every rollout of every character has been really fun. So, and it doesn't matter if it's a Iron Man or like Guardians of the Galaxy.
And, you know, she's a great actress. I really like Brie
Larson.
Yes,
she really is.
And
that's so smart. You know, you get somebody who can really act.
You know, they didn't just get like a hottie. They got like, she's a really good actress.
Get me a CW actress.
Yeah. No, they went.
They're cheaper.
You know, and I'm
excited.
I'm pumped for the whole thing.
I think it's
going to
be a lot of fun. Yeah.
And this next trailer is the Bumblebee new trailer. And I'm already saying as we're going to watch it that I'm ready to be Maze Runnered on this movie.
Yeah.
I'm Charlie Watson.
Are you guys Transformer fans?
Today,
Chris is.
Yes, but not of the
is
films.
The Beetle for sale?
Okay. I'm with you on that.
I grew up watching Transformers, the cartoon in the 80s, and
same.
I love the 80s cartoon. The Michael Bay ones are abominations.
I had all the toys.
Yes.
So totally agree with you.
Yeah.
on the movies.
You're in a safe place, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And when I saw this trailer, I'm like, okay, Michael Bay's got, he's not directing it. It's the guy who did Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh.
He's directing it. So I'm already a little more interested.
So you have no idea where he came from?
No idea.
And I thought it was going to be a smaller movie, like from the first trailer. It's like just kind of one Transformer and,
people can
you
be
know, the, with the character development. But it's not.
Understand.
It's got John Cena, a bunch
from
of Transformers and explosions, too.
He goes to the beach.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm good.
But I love the fact that they're using Bumblebee as the old Volkswagen, because that's how you kind of knew him in the 80s.
There's a war raging on our planet. If this criminal isn't found, that war may find its way here.
Is there anyone that can help you? You have a family? Oh, who but me?
Even the transforming looks less dumb in this movie.
Did they pull some of the Transformers sound effects that they used to have in cartoons?
It felt. It feels that way, yeah.
These things really are.
And it also
this,
has...
That is as that feels like the toys that I have now. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you seen the fighter jets?
And you also have the Optimus Prime as the same actor. And then you've got Soundwave, who's also from the
and its
the original stories.
Take it down!
But Chris, you sound like
Chris,
you're excited
for
this movie.
I am. I'm,
I think, Chris, you're making me excited.
Yeah.
I really hadn't really thought that much about this because I'm not a fan of the movies.
Right.
But... You're getting me fired up right now.
I know. It's crazy. Like,
All right. I'll see it.
Against my better judgment, I want to see this movie now.
When's this coming out?
Christmas.
And I'm not going anywhere.
All right. You're not with us.
No.
No. Fair enough. I can't argue with anybody who would not be with you, with me on this.
I can't. Oh, no, there's a wacky scene in an apartment.
Isn't that hilarious? He broke the chair.
He was too big for the chair.
He doesn't like a broken chair.
Ah, broken chair jokes are always fantastic. So I'll be here to...
refute?
To comfort Chris when he comes back crestfallen from seeing this in the theaters.
Yeah, the first thing out of my mouth is going to be, God damn it.
Yeah. I'm going to go, really, Chris? Yeah. Who saw this coming?
And I'll say, that was a hoot.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have Mike on for the spoiler for this one.
All right. That means I have to go see this?
Yeah.
You're definitely getting a text in the middle of this movie.
Yeah. That'll be a fair text. And okay, and on DVD Blu-ray, Solo, A Star Wars Story, the movie that made Disney rethink their Star Wars rollout strategy.
Yes.
And rightfully so. It's amazing how the executives finally figure out what the fans already knew.
I know.
Right. Too much.
Too much. Mm-hmm. It's too much. If you didn't see this movie, I guess it's fine to watch it now. There's some nice Easter eggs in it, but it really misses the mark, which is a bummer.
It's one of those completely unnecessary. It's like movies that are like, well, this was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
I didn't need, as a Star Wars fan, I didn't need this movie.
I didn't need it.
So Uncle Drew, that's the, I think, Shaquille O'Neal movie, I believe.
He plays an old man. Kyrie Irving. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Is the lead.
Mm-hmm. John Gotti, the Gotti movie with Travolta.
So, can I just say that's the movie that I'm at, of that list that I'm most looking forward to seeing, just because I've heard it's so terrible that it's really fun. Mm-hmm. Brian, who runs production here, went and saw it in the theater three times just because it made him laugh so much. Because
it's so bad.
So, have you guys seen this movie?
No way. I saw the trailer and went, nope.
Yeah, I'm like, really? I'm like, oh.
I love a good mob movie, and I love the John Gotti story.
I like a good unintentionally bad, intentionally good bad movie.
You know? That makes me want to see it. If it's that bad that it's amazing.
Yeah, that's apparently, if you go in with that mindset, like, oh, I'm going to laugh right
then
now.
Then you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah. He's like, oh, John Travolta's in another movie.
Oh. Well, with a hairpiece.
Yeah.
And it's not done.
So, and the site spotlight, we want to talk about we've gotten the message boards working again, but I was talking to our webmaster, Wolfman, Brian Wolf.
The Lobo.
We do need a board moderator. Ooh. So if you're interested in moderating the boards and starting threads and keeping the boards going, email at info@comedyfilmnerds.com and we will get you set up and hooked up and with the Wolfman, and you could be our moderator. So we really want to get these more active on the site and get you guys more involved in the conversation. So we really... excited to get this back up and running.
Okay, cool.
So, all right.
Coming out this week.
Premiering this week, Night School.
Kevin Hart, Tiffany Haddish.
And our own Al Madrigal.
And Al Madrigal's in it, too. Mm-hmm. So, have you seen the movie yet?
Have
you got a screener?
No. He likes me, but not that much.
Yeah. So, that came out. It's a big mix of films this weekend. Finally, we're getting more releases.
Yeah.
Hellfest, which is a horror movie that it's a premise that's been in horror movies for multiple years. Like if you if you email if you do a Google on the premise, it's like, oh, there's like 10 movies that have this premise. But basically, it's a
it looks interesting.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where it's like, okay, there's a theme park with, you know, the horror mazes and stuff, but a real serial killer gets in and it's killing people for real. But people think it's kind of part of the show.
Got it.
So we'll see how long that premise lasts, probably about 90 minutes.
As long as there's dumb teenagers that go to these things, they're going to get murdered.
Yeah. And, you know, it's arguable that some of them maybe deserve it.
Yeah.
Smallfoot is the
animated film.
Yeah, animated film that looks like, what's the word I'm looking for? Awful? Yeah. I think.
Well, I'll tell you, as the father of three children, this is the movie on this list I'll probably see first.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. It looks like it might be okay to take your kids to.
Yeah, I mean.
Like, it'll have enough adult jokes that you'll like it.
I've sat through movies that I have no intention. Well, sometimes I'm pleasantly surprised. Oftentimes I'm just like, okay, something you just do.
Yeah. And I think.
Being a parent.
I think if we do go to the movies this weekend as a family, most likely we'll see House with a Clock in Its Walls, because that seemed to interest them more.
Yeah. No, so, actually, you're right. They're all on board for that one.
Yeah. So we'll see. And then The Old Man and the Gun, which is, I believe, is that Robert Redford's film?
It is.
Film, and where he's basically an old con who wants to do another job, I believe. He gets out of jail and starts robbing banks again.
That's the gist.
If I, yeah.
Based like, on a book, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Looks like The Gray Fox that I talked about that came out in the 80s, which is really cool.
So it looks like a fun movie. Now, that's the kind of movie, too, I wish that the release schedules would kind of catch up, where like, oh, I'd like to see that on demand in my house on the weekend.
Mm.
You know, as a you know, release schedule. I can see like some of these bigger movies in the theater, but Old Man and the Gun, I feel like that should go directly. If you're going to do a theatrical release, great, but do a simultaneous. Let me see it on the
right.
But I'm pushing everybody to night school this weekend. Let's go check out
Go check out Al Madrigal. Tiffany Haddish, who's been on this show as well.
That makes sense.
Kevin Hart, we're waiting on you.
Yeah, come on. Have Al get them for us.
That's
our
episode 435. Lock it down. You know what I'm saying? Halfway to 1305.
We'll get there.
Third of the way, excuse me, to 1305. So 1305 is going to be an exciting episode. Mike Bertolino, where can people go online?
You're on the Twitter, right?
I am, at M. Bertolino, I believe. And I think it's the same on Instagram.
And if they want, if they're going to be in Phoenix in the end of October, what would they do? Where would they go?
They need to go. You can go to allthingscomedy.com and you can find it there. We have a we have a landing page just for the festival. You can also go to Stand Up Live, which is one of our main venues in Phoenix. And tickets are on sale now for a lot of things. I think Bill's podcast just went on sale. So. But either way, just you don't need to follow me. You need to follow All Things Comedy. You can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. But keep tuning in. Keep laughing.
Guys,
awesome.
Thank you so much. Mike, thanks for coming on the
show. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, it was great.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And if you're in Phoenix the end of October, please come out. We'll be there. Comedy Filmers will be there.
Absolutely.
Just giggling our faces off the whole weekend.
Yeah. I think the tagline we have this year is, it's probably going to be a mess.
That's great.
I'll be in the corner somewhere beating a joke into the ground with some comic. That's what I'm
doing. With an actual club.
With an actual club. I will have a bat. But that's our episode, guys. Please go to the store, and if you were a
Kickstarter backer,
so excited for
Long Ago and Far Away, it is finally here. So
we will be starting
to send those rewards out this week. Aaron and I, we have about 400 to get through, so it'll be a couple weeks before we get to all of them, but it will be
so
there.
So cool.
So
it's awesome.
Thank you. And it's been years. It'll be done, and it will be in the Comedy Film Nerd store in the next week. So we will be announcing when it's officially for sale.
Just
there.
In time for holidays.
Yes.
I mean, I absolutely love the illustrations. This is
good. Yeah.
It's so cool, man.
Fernando. Thank you. I'm excited to read this.
This is our
really good job.
Fourth Kickstarter project that we've funded.
It's third.
Third, right? Mm-hmm. Podfest,
earbuds.
And this.
Yep. And it won't be the last.
But see, guys,
we might take a break in between.
This is what it's all about. The entrepreneurial spirit of comedians.
Yes.
Love it. Love what you guys do.
Don't have anything to announce yet, but talking to publishers, too, about getting it out there even further. Yep.
Stay tuned.
Yep.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Mike Bertolino. Thank you, Aaron or Neil, whatever your name is. Stop changing your goddamn name. It's making things very complicated. We appreciate all the help here at everything at the All Things Comedy World headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember, Han shot first.